The following episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast deals with serious issues such as drug references, sexual references, and violence that may be distressing to some listeners. It is not suitable for children. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome back to Lyrics of Their Life, the podcast where we explore the extraordinary lives lived by those that wrote or perform the songs we know and love. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and in today's episode, we jump right back into the story of the one and only Tiny Tim, as he begins his ascent to the very top of show business, as well as the controversial but record-breaking night on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, where Tiny Tim married the 17-year-old Miss Vicky in front of millions of people watching on from around the world. This episode is full of scandals, heartbreak, and simply unbelievable Tiny Tim moments that will leave you shaking your head in disbelief at how insane this musician really was. So without further ado, let's jump back into his story. This is the story of Tiny Tim, Part 2. This is Lyrics of Their Life.
Prince has died at the age of 57.
This is it.
Sorry, Gary. But I was always the talented member of the band.
Keep booing, little girl. I will hit a man with glasses.
I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Former Beatle John Lennon, who was 40, was shot and killed last night outside his luxury apartment in New York.
Has-beens shouldn't present fucking awards to Gonna Be.
During 1963, Herbert, now age 31, would play his first gig as Tiny Tim at the Surfside Club in New York City, where he relied heavily on donations from the crowd as his payment. However, this wouldn't last as an ongoing gig, as the owner himself didn't think that Tiny's act was appropriate for his club and for his patrons, and that he would be better suited playing in gay or drag bars. Tiny would often cross the line when on occasions he would become so enthralled by his own performance that he would start becoming aroused and would begin to strip off his clothes, while Tiny would also have things thrown at him, such as shoes, because of his weird and quirky stage presence. Tiny would take the advice of the owner of the Surfside Club, with George King booking Tiny Tim in for a 6-month run of gigs at the gay and lesbian bars known as the Fat Black Pussycat and most prominently at Page 3 in Greenwich Village, New York, earning $41 per week to play a 17-minute set for 6 nights a week, as his lengthy shows lasted from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. sometimes. Tiny Tim claimed that he had no problem performing at these venues despite being aimed at homosexuals, which would have conflicted with his Catholic beliefs, as Tiny believed it wasn't up to a preacher's interpretation of sin, judgment, and their interpretation of the Bible on who earns salvation, and instead it was up to God himself. However, playing at this venue did bring his family and friends to wonder about his sexuality. It was around this time that Tiny Tim would get the opportunity to feature in a couple of independent films, including short film The Yellow Sequence and the feature-length film Normal Love, both of which were released during 1963 and were some of Tiny's first known appearances on camera. Despite these early scenes not being used in current versions of the films. For a number of years, Tiny Tim would ply his trade on the live performance scene of New York City in Greenwich Village, continuing to perform at the Black Fat Pussycat, Page 3, and attempting to get his name out there while billing himself on posters as America's answer to the Beatles, which was often disputed by those that came to see the show, claiming he was nowhere near the Beatles' level. While at the lesbian bar, the Page 3, Tiny found himself fantasizing over a number of the women who frequented the bar, despite most of the ladies, of course, being gay. In fact, very creepy and predatorially, Tiny even found himself taking items that the girls had left behind, or that they had even touched that evening, such as lipstick, and keeping them as some sort of weird souvenir or keepsake, while their beauty often overwhelmed Tiny so much that he would carry their bags for them and offer to clean some of their houses. Tiny wrote in his diary that he became so obsessed with one woman in particular, named Miss Roberta, that he fantasized about being dominated by her and handcuffed to a bed to let her have her way with him. It would also be here at the Page 3, with the many beautiful women to admire, that Tiny would begin handing out trophies, called classics, to the most beautiful woman, a gesture that certainly wouldn't fly in today's society and is quite controversial in itself, with the very first award in the form of a $25 physical trophy going to the 18-year-old Miss Snooki. Tiny's hand-picked award winners would even get a song written and recorded about them, with Miss Snooki's being called the Spaceship Song, where he sings about flying off in a spaceship to be with Miss Snooki. While in a shockingly inappropriate instance, at the Page 3, Tiny also awarded a trophy to the 15-year-old Miss Lorna, and disturbingly calling the song he wrote for her Our Little Secret. Not to mention, Tiny had also been sending letters and songs he had written to 17-year-old actress Tuesday World, as he had a fascination for her around this time, often confessing his love for her in these songs. This distasteful behaviour led Tiny's relationship with his manager George King to break down, with the scam artist even having his own standards that he just couldn't look past, and by 1964, King decided to resign. However, Tiny Tim continued to give out trophies to women for many years to come, and in fact, it became an annual event for him. While living with his parents still, and performing in New York, Tiny would also attend his favourite baseball and ice hockey team's games in his pastime, while also attending the theatre, the movies, and poetry evenings. It was hard for Tiny to fit in during this time, and even while minding his own business and attending an ice hockey game featuring his favourite team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, Tiny was chased out of the arena and into the subway by a group of young boys who barracked for the opposition team, threatening to bash Tiny, while also throwing beer cans at him and calling him a witch, of course due to his large nose. Others threatened to cut off his long hair, while some even threatened to kill him. Replacing George King as Tiny's manager would be Ronnie Lyons, who struggled to hook Tiny up with respected musicians or producers like Phil Spector, who turned Tiny down due to his strange persona and disturbing reputation with young women and inappropriate behaviours. However, Tiny began to rub shoulders with the likes of Bob Dylan and Mick Jagger at celebrity parties, with Tiny often scoring invites from male celebrities due to his connections with women that he befriended from the Page 3 Club, as these celebrities thought they could use Tiny to hook up with the women that he brought along with him. And they also brought him along as an almost amusement park attraction or party trick due to his strange eccentricity, where he enjoyed acting as a detective, keeping the partygoers entertained with his strange behaviour. Tiny was believed to have come up with a name for his detective alias with his friend Leroy Becker at one of these parties, naming himself Judas K. Foxglove. This interest in being a detective even led Tiny to think up his very own thoughts on what actually occurred during the Wiley Huffett career girl murders of 1963 in Upper Manhattan, where two women were murdered, with Tiny believing it could have been their uncle that killed them. Tiny believed his own theory so much that he ventured down to the station to tell the cops his theory, only for the police to become somewhat suspicious of him due to his strange theory and interest in the case, as he was sat down and interviewed and interrogated, and was eventually told to let the police handle it and that he should stick to being a musician. After this, with Tiny being a bit shaken up by the investigators, he decided it was best to drop his alias, and Judas K. Foxglove would never be utilised again. During July 1965, Tiny's long-running gigs at the Page 3 would come to an abrupt end when the Page 3 lost its liquor licence after an undercover police officer, posing as a patron, asked a waitress if he could be brought a girl for sexual favours in exchange for money. When the waitress returned with a girl for the man, the officer stood up, flashed his badge, and arrests would be made. The Page 3 would be closed, reopening as a cafe, but without its liquor license, as the once vibrant scene was officially dead, and all the gigs had dried up for Tiny, leaving him without a job, and permanently living back home with his elderly and disapproving parents at the age of 33. But despite their lack of faith in him, continuing to tell him he'll never amount to anything, and stardom for him was an unattainable dream, Tiny didn't lose hope, turning to Jesus to answer his prayers, to become a star, as he got down on his knees and prayed. Not seeing any sign from the Lord that he should listen to his parents and stop, Tiny refused to return to average day jobs and kept on hustling. For a brief period towards the end of 1965, the now 33-year-old Herbert reverted back to one of his previous stage names, named Rolly Dell, and enrolled in an amateur talent contest, winning the whole thing. However, once his popularity dipped again, he revived his Tiny Tim persona and would play at Steve Paul's The Scene, a nightclub known for hosting the likes of The Doors and Jimi Hendrix, and even performing on the same bill as them here. Tiny would string together a number of quality performances here, gaining notoriety in the area and at The Scene. And despite some people thinking he was a homeless man that they had got off the street, they absolutely loved him. With this exposure landing him a TV appearance on the Merv Griffin Show, which became his first national TV appearance. Surprising Tiny that evening was that his father Boutros was in attendance in the audience that night, as Tiny performed Living in the Sunlight and Loving in the Moonlight. The performance received mixed reviews, with Griffin offering Tiny Tim the chance to return for a further 6 more shows. However, after complaints flooded in following Tiny's next performance on the show, the rest of Tiny's appearance bookings were scrapped. In 1966, Tiny would record and release his first single, titled April Showers, with a B-side of Little Girl, under Blue Cat Records. However, these recordings remain rare, despite not being successful at the time. Slowly, Tiny started picking up more gigs and appearances on national TV, and was even once sent a Rolls Royce filled with daffodils by Hugh Romney, aka Wavy Gravy, that was set to pick Tiny up on the way to a gig, only for Tiny to pull out due to his mother telling him he must stay home. When Tiny informed Romney, he was furious that he had pulled out and that he was still taking orders from his parents at the age of now 34. During 1966, Tiny would also enter into a brief relationship with a 19-year-old African-American woman named Barbara Williams, who he first met back in July 1965. The pair wouldn't start dating, however, until mid-1966, when Tiny even brought Barbara home to meet his parents, only for Tilly, Tiny's mother, to be unsure about her, with Tiny's parents believed to have been extremely disapproving of their relationship, perhaps due to them being an interracial couple, which sadly was quite taboo in those days. Despite this, the pair would become engaged when Barbara made the decision to get down on one knee and propose to Tiny while on a walk together around New York City, with Tiny often referring to Barbara in his journals at the time as his spiritual wife, as they weren't ever officially married. However, Tiny claims they were spiritually wed, as they both joined hands and placed them on a Bible while declaring their love for one another. This way, they could focus on their goals in life, with Tiny wanting to be famous before marrying, while Barbara wanted to finish university. Their relationship, however, was quite rocky, with Tiny often wanting to control things. However, when the strong-willed Barbara started taking some control back and being honest with Tiny over certain things that bothered her about him, he struggled to accept this. Their relationship would eventually end officially on the 30th of June 1966, after just a few months together, after Barbara grew tired of Tiny's obsession with his excessive use of makeup and skin creams, as she questioned his manhood and sexuality. This came at a convenient time for Tiny, however, as he was also struggling with his conflicting faith to God, sex before marriage, and attempting to please Barbara sexually at the same time, as he wrote in his journal that he often gave in to temptation by receiving his first kiss by the age of 34 with Barbara, followed by what he called, quote, heavy petting, blaming this temptation on the devil and stating that their relationship consisted of, quote, 44 days of sin, despite not actually going all the way and remaining a virgin at the age of 34. To Tiny, even dancing with Barbara was considered erotic, with many things out of bounds and viewed as sinful. When Barbara left the relationship, Tiny would be hurt when Barbara told him he would never make it as a musician and made fun of him for still living at home with his parents. After their breakup, Tiny returned to the clubs where he could socialize with young women again. During 1966 to 1967, when he was on the road, Tiny would stay in Sunland, LA, with Hugh Romney, aka Wavy Gravy, in his apartment, away from his parents' insufferable living conditions and expectations of him. It was here where Romney noticed that Tiny had a range of strange habits, which included taking 5 baths a day and his strange obsession for purchasing and consuming several cans of spinach while hiding away in his bedroom. This was around the time that Tiny started to become a vegetarian, with his strange and unusual diet consisting of raw vegetables, like onions, as well as bananas, grapefruit, wheat germ, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, and lots of honey, which was his favourite food of all, as he would often mix honey into a bowl with pumpkin seeds and wheat germ and eat it. Tiny also continued his tradition of handing out a trophy to the most beautiful woman, as well as trying a new onstage look, painting his face one half black or brown and the other half white, which he liked to call split personalities of the 70s. However, this persona was short-lived, as it wasn't working either. Tiny was so broke from the lack of gigs that he couldn't even afford to ride the subway home, and instead had to walk multiple blocks home, which often meant that he would get jumped. A highlight for Tiny during July 1967, however, was the fact that he performed on the same bill as the one and only Jimi Hendrix. Then in late 1967, Tiny Tim's fortunes would change for the better when, during a performance on a rainy night at the Scene in New York City, Tiny gave yet another quirky performance to a small crowd of people. But little did he know that Warner Brothers and Reprise Records executive Mo Austin was present in the crowd. Austin surprisingly loved the performance, claiming that Tiny made him laugh, and he thought he had what it took, claiming he was freaky but talented, and that he appealed to Austin's, quote, perverse side. Mo Austin was so impressed by what he saw that he offered Tiny a deal on the spot to sign with Reprise Records, the subsidiary label of Warner Brothers, owned by Frank Sinatra, as he flew Tiny out to LA to finalise the contract. With Tiny having to break the current six contracts he had running with various venues, like the Scene, but he couldn't pass up this opportunity. Tiny Tim signed his contract with Reprise Records, and by December 1967, he headed into the TTG recording studio in LA to record his debut album with producer Richard Perry. Fast forward to 1968, and the now 35-year-old Tiny Tim would land his first big break on the Peter Yarrow's documentary film You Are What You Eat, which focused on the 60s hippie era and culture. With Tiny performing the songs Be My Baby by the Ronettes and I Got You Babe by Sonny and Cher as a duet with Eleanor Baruchian for the soundtrack to the film, while also appearing in these scenes with Tiny showing a comedy aspect to his performance by performing Cher's female verses to the song I Got You Babe, utilising his high-pitched feminine voice. During the recordings for the tracks, Tiny was said to have been quite difficult due to his unusual bathroom habits, having taken himself all the way home in the middle of recording to go to the toilet, refusing to use the public restroom in the studio due to his extreme germophobia, most likely taking a bath as well before returning to the studio to record after a whole hour had passed, making everyone wait around for him. However, he was said to have taken the performance aspect itself in his stride and very seriously, and he was quite the professional. Tiny was now well on his way to making it in the business, as he started to rub shoulders with some more stars such as Bob Dylan, who he filmed an unreleased film with, where Tiny was set to play the ringmaster in the circus. Tiny also partied with the Grateful Dead and the Mamas and the Papas, including his good friend Mama Cass, and he also knew Jim Morrison of the Doors, with Tiny claiming Jim even offered Tiny the song People Are Strange. However, once the Doors took off, Jim Morrison decided to keep the song for themselves. This successful appearance in You Are What You Eat would lead Tiny to appear on the comedy sketch TV program Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, which had aired for the first time earlier that year in 1968. Co-host Dan Rowan would introduce Tiny that evening, claiming that they like to give new talent an opportunity before welcoming Tiny Tim to the stage. As Tiny waltzed onto stage, wearing white makeup, sporting his long curly hair, and holding his trusty ukulele and shopping bag, Tiny shocked the audience and co-host Dick Martin, who couldn't believe what he was witnessing, as Tiny performed a Tisket a Tasket and Shirley Temple's on the Good Ship Lollipop. The audience were both confused but also entertained, as Tiny ended the performance by blowing kisses to the audience while gushing eccentrically at their applause. And after viewers rang in curious to see and hear more from him, Tiny was invited back by Dan Rowan for further appearances, where for the next two shows, he performed Tiptoe Through the Tulips. This, of course, was despite Dan Rowan's co-host Dick Martin not exactly being a fan of Tiny and not being as excited to have him back. During February 1968, Tiny appeared on the front cover of Billboard magazine, and all of a sudden, more and more women began to notice him in the street. A far stretch from his own mother, who was actually embarrassed to be seen with him in public up to this point. However, this was about to change. While at this time, Tiny Tim and Richard Perry had also completed recording and production for Tiny Tim's debut album, taking 3 months to complete the record under a budget of $25,000 and the financial backing of the label. On March 4th, 1968, Tiny and his parents were gathered around the radio when, for the very first time, Tiny and his new album, God Bless Tiny Tim, was played live on air in New York City, which only stroked Tiny's ego even more so. The more attention that Tiny got, the more opportunities came his way when Ron de Blasio agreed to be his manager. Then, on an appearance on Laugh-In, Tiny was asked how old he was, with Tiny all but avoiding the question by claiming, quote, "I feel so young. I really feel 19 again." This was despite Tiny closing in on his 36th birthday, often choosing to avoid the reality that he was aging and that he wasn't the spring chicken he claimed to be. This appearance on Laugh-In sparked rumours about his age, with some articles at the time assuming his age, as they estimated that he could be as old as 48, which Tiny would have almost fainted at hearing. Tiny would essentially lie to the public about his age for much of his career, which was something that he later admitted to feeling guilty about on the Howard Stern radio show in the 90s. During April 1968, Tiny Tim would release his debut album titled God Bless Tiny Tim under Reprise Records. Featuring Tiny's iconic falsetto voice while also showing off his vocal range, occasionally singing in baritone, the two-sided 15-track album includes some of Tiny's best and unique work despite consisting of many covers, with Tiny making the songs his own. With tracks including Tiptoe Through the Tulips, Living in the Sunlight, Loving in the Moonlight, The Viper, Stay Down Here Where You Belong, I Got You Babe, and Daddy Daddy, What Is Heaven Like? The album sold extremely well, reaching number 16 on the US Billboard charts, spending 7 months on the Billboard 200 chart, and is regarded today as Tiny's best album, and as a classic, selling over 100,000 copies in just the first week of the album's release. With the single Tiptoe Through the Tulips itself selling well over 200,000 copies. Reviews for the album, however, were mixed, with some finding Tiny's style to be too weird or cringy, that it couldn't be taken seriously to be played on radio often, or his voice to some was too disturbing or hard to bear, while others found the album to be amusing or entertaining, with some even calling it a masterpiece. Whether it was, however, is really up to the individual. Some struggled with his appearance and claimed he surely couldn't be like that in real life, and that it must be a gimmick thought up by the record label. However, they would soon learn that Tiny was exactly who they were seeing on the TV. With Tiny Tim, you either loved him or hated him, and this was something that Tiny struggled to deal with, especially when all he wanted was to be loved and adored by everyone. Tiptoe Through the Tulips would also be released during April 1968 and would enter the US Billboard charts at number 83 before eventually making its way to number 17 at its peak. Featuring Tiny's eerie and haunting high falsetto vocals, the song today remains a creepy rendition, perfect for the likes of horror films and TV shows. And while the song was popular on radio and during live TV performances at the time, Tiny's record label wasn't overly pleased that the single failed to reach the top 10 in the US. The song happened to be so controversial with Tiny's unique take on the track that the disc jockey named Birmingham, Alabama, refused to play the song, even walking off air and striking over it, after being told that he had to play it. What was most shocking of all, however, was the fact that on the actual recording for the album, the ukulele featured in the recording for Tiptoe was actually performed by a different studio musician and wasn't actually performed by Tiny Tim, which Tiny refused to acknowledge was true until the late 90s. The success of the album, God Bless Tiny Tim, led to Tiny appearing on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson for the first time on the 4th of April 1968, which gave Tiny a further platform to display his weird and quirky behaviour, as people were honestly shocked when tuning in to see him. On his debut appearance on The Tonight Show, Tiny sang both Living in the Sunshine, Loving in the Moonlight, and Tiptoe Through the Tulips. However, his appearance would be overshadowed by the tragic death of African-American activist and philosopher Martin Luther King when the 39-year-old was shot dead by James Earl Ray. Tiny's first appearance on the show just happened to be poor timing, as Tiny was being interviewed by Johnny Carson as they sat and laughed together, as well as Tiny singing Tiptoe, at the very same moment that other channels were playing documentaries and running breaking news bulletins and tributes on Martin Luther King, with his death taking eyes away from Tiny and onto the bigger, more important news. Despite this, many were still tuned in and watched on as Tiny became a sensation overnight. And as Tiny rose to fame, he wrote in his diary at this time, quote, "Dear Lord, thanks for the most fantastic happenings. People stop me wherever I go on the streets, and I sign autographs, although I've hardly rested, and I have a hoarse throat. It is wild." Tiny became so popular that he was run off his feet, posing for Esquire magazine, appearing on radio and TV for interviews, signing autographs, and replying to all of his fan mail by hand from fans both young and old, while also attending his favourite baseball team, the LA Dodgers games, and ice hockey team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And he was now even being recognised by some of his favourite players at the games, as he once said on a late-night talk show that he preferred to go to watch the Dodgers or Maple Leafs over a date with a girl. Tiny would also receive invites from the Hollywood elites to attend their parties and gatherings at nightclubs, interacting with huge movie stars, musicians, and artists, and receiving praise from them, such as Frank Zappa, Nancy Sinatra, and Beatles members George Harrison and John Lennon, with John Lennon actually pushing for Tiny to perform at the Royal Albert Hall, while also announcing, quote, "Tiny Tim for President, Tiny Tim for Queen." The Monkees' Mickey Dolan called Tiny, quote, "the most important artist we've had in a decade of music, and that's legit," while others claimed Tiny had revived a dying genre of music and made it his own. Tiny Tim had finally arrived, and just as he had dreamed, he was adored, and the flow of beautiful women would come with it, testing Tiny's faith and his resistance to sex before marriage. However, Tiny was so determined to keep on the straight and narrow and resist temptation with these women that he even hired a man by the name of Gary Green on $100 an hour to act as a security type figure to keep him from sinning and sleeping with his fans, or anyone for that matter, as he didn't trust himself. Despite beautiful women being a weak spot for Tiny, he was strong when it came to his resistance to drugs, cigarettes, and alcohol, staying away from these vices for much of his life. Despite the 36-year-old Tiny Tim still being a virgin, it wasn't as if he was completely innocent, having fooled around in other ways in his lifetime, but instead of revealing this, he and his management decided to portray the innocent virgin, never been kissed story to his fans, who were mostly female, in order to suck them in further and make them believe that they had a chance to be his first. This was especially the case when Tiny appeared for interviews and on the front cover of many teen magazines, including Photo Play, Tiger Beat, and TV Radio Mirror, with detailed so-called fact sheets highlighting Tiny's favourite things, such as flowers, rock music, and sports. And while some facts were true, others were obviously fabricated to appeal to his female fans. Some female fans professed their love for Tiny, some stalked him, and others made parodies about him. But it didn't matter, as long as the love continued to flow in, as he would be mobbed by fans wherever they went. Tiny Tim merchandise was increasingly popular, featuring sheet music for Tiny's songs, items featuring images of Tiny on them, such as lunchboxes, pens, board games, mugs, shopping bags, outfits styled like Tiny, and even presidential badges stating Tiny Tim for President or First Lady. Tiny's manager, Ron de Blasio, even claimed that a replica Tiny Tim ukulele almost hit the shelves, only to be scrapped, as they were worried it would ruin Tiny's image and quite quickly turn him into a cheap novelty, since every kid in the country and world would snap them up, cheapening his gimmick and appeal to adults, despite the potential for making quite a large amount of money. Ironically, however, Tiny would become a novelty as time went on, regardless of this decision. It was now official, however, in this moment, that Tiny Tim mania had begun, as his life quickly turned from wannabe star to the talk of the nation, and soon for many countries around the world, with countries like Australia and England being very fond of Tiny Tim. For a brief moment, by mid-1968, Tiny truly did become the king for a day, as he was quoted as saying in his personal diary, quote, "At this moment, I am the biggest star in the country. I've gone from here in California to the tip of New York. I am invited to parties with all the great stars of Hollywood, with beautiful girls. I am the toast of the city here in Hollywood, as well as in New York." While Tiny seemingly didn't care for the money, and instead just loved lapping up the fame and attention from women, Tiny was quite naive about his money, claiming he trusted his managers, and that they were good people doing their jobs, allowing them to take as much commission as they like. Little did he know that his management were banking a large portion of Tiny's earnings for themselves, leaving Tiny practically penniless for most of the time, with his agent allocating a measly allowance of $100 a week for Tiny to spend as he pleases, despite his agent and management taking a much larger sum home with them. Tiny was simply too wrapped up in the moment and the fame, and oblivious to the fact he was being taken advantage of, despite warnings from others. While often, Tiny would be approached by men claiming to own shares in Tiny Tim as a performer, after his previous managers had sold him off, as these men claimed that they were entitled to various amounts of his money, which resulted in Tiny having to file lawsuits, costing him thousands of dollars on lawyers' fees. But despite being ripped off by others, Tiny himself was also to blame, often splurging what he had on musical instruments, sheet music, giving hotel staff ridiculously large tips, and he would often ask management to spend on things like adding an orchestra to his performance, props, flowers, or other special requests, having no idea or care about production costs, assuming that the label paid for it all, only to be advised that it was coming out of his pocket all along, and that he was in severe debt. Tiny had also developed around this time a new obsession with vitamin pills, taking a range of types of supplements and at least 40 pills a day, while he once recalled in his diary that he splurged on 15 lettuce and tomato sandwiches, quickly sending his bills skyrocketing. While on another occasion, Tiny called room service and ordered everything possible on the menu, and when Tiny performed at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas for the first time, it cost him thousands of dollars instead of making a profit, with Tiny claiming it wasn't the smartest career move and that it set him back financially. With Vegas, of course, being known as Sin City, Tiny would do exactly that while in Vegas, stooping to one of his lowest, unforgivable, and most sinful moments of his lifetime. After a show in Caesar's Palace in Vegas, during late 1968, the now 36-year-old Tiny Tim admitted in his diary to sharing 10 hours with a teenage fan of his who was believed to have been an underage girl and around the age of 15. The young lady, known as Candy, happened to sneak into his room after Tiny had handed her a key earlier on that evening, which unlocked the door to his room. Tiny claimed that he regretted doing this shortly after giving it to her, with a search to remove the girl from his room getting underway, only for his security team to be unsuccessful in locating her. Later that evening, Tiny came to find the teenager, known as Candy, hiding in his hotel room shower, waiting for him to arrive. With Tiny writing about the sickening incident, claiming, quote, "Sin was high." The pair would share a shower together, as Miss Candy even spread peanut butter and honey over Tiny's body before proceeding to lick it off, with Tiny claiming it was okay because he didn't do anything and that it was all her. What they did next was anyone's guess. However, Tiny maintained that he exited the room still a virgin. With the help of Ron de Blasio, the incident was kept under wraps and swept under the carpet, and Candy, luckily for Tiny's sake, remained tight-lipped about their night together. Had the media got wind of the story, however, Tiny could have well been behind bars that evening, and his career well and truly over, With rumours of Tiny being a homosexual circulating in the media, this was now the least of his worries. As Tiny wrote in his diary, quote, "Miss Candy did not tell her mother. Although I escaped a rough situation, I still committed a deep sin. I let you down, O Lord, as well as my manager." At times, however, it wasn't entirely Tiny's fault, as he would often have girls as young as 15 walk straight into his room and undress in front of him before ushering them out. Or there was one girl who was around the age of 13 or 14 who was even having sexual conversations over the phone with Tiny and recording these calls. As she told Tiny, she was much older, with Tiny's friend Johnny Pineapple claiming Tiny came so close to a huge scandal that would have cost him everything, while others claim that Tiny got a thrill out of the temptation and sinful behaviour. Despite the scares and close calls, Tiny continued messing about with his female fans, but due to the guilt he often felt about sinning and what God must be thinking, when he would often lather up women in whipped cream before lapping it up, he would begin to self-sabotage his rendezvous by yelling out obscene things like "get under the blankets, they're bombing England," before running around all crazy-like, scaring the women away, or even being as low to send them a telegram to break it off with them. This strange self-sabotage would be a common trend in Tiny Tim's career and love life, always pushing what he originally wanted away, perhaps feeling as though he was an imposter or like he didn't deserve the positive things that had come his way. Perhaps after his run-in with the underage Miss Candy and the fact that he had sinned so much in the past, that perhaps the guilt just ate him up. Tiny became so fearful of sin that he even attempted to refrain from speaking to any women, even if they weren't interested in him. Tiny happened to land himself in hot water in more ways than one around this time, as he would even be investigated by London's Federal Bureau of Investigations, who organised a month-long inquiry headed by departments of the FBI in the US to look further into Tiny Tim's history, which was actually brought on simply due to his weird and wacky performances and appearance, while rumours also circulated that Tiny was involved with the Mafia, hoodlums, and Frank Sinatra, who Tiny had recently met while recording his second studio album, while also being under contract with Sinatra's Reprise Records. However, the investigation returned a clean slate against Tiny's name. This wouldn't be the first time that Tiny was investigated or raised eyebrows at from officials, having performed at serial killer Charles Manson's farm after being brought there through Tiny's friendship with the controversial Mama Cass of the Mamas and the Papas. While Tiny would also later controversially state in an interview that he believes Manson was, quote, framed. Following the success of Tiptoe Through the Tulips as Tiny's first single, Reprise Records would release Tiny's second single, being a cover of Bring Back Those Rockabye Baby Days. However, the standalone single flopped, only peaking at number 95, which was largely put down to being too safe, as Tiny reverted back to a baritone rather than using his high falsetto. Tiny was said to have actually hated the song and blamed the production for its failure. Following this, Tiny's unofficial second album, titled Concert in Fairyland by Tiny Tim, was released under Bouquet Records without the permission of Warner Brothers or Reprise Records and without Tiny's permission. With Bouquet Records attempting to cash in on Tiny's success, with the album containing lackluster recordings from 1962, with Tiny as Darry Dover in the Wycliffs, that were all sped up to sound more like the current day Tiny Tim. Bouquet did offer Warner Brothers the option to pay them $25,000 to $100,000 as a ransom to stop them from releasing the album, but Warner Brothers refused and instead opted to take the matter to court before dropping the case and letting it be released. The bootlegged album, despite not being backed by a big label, sold well initially, selling 100,000 copies, before Tiny and Warner Brothers succeeded in court, putting a stop to the sales of the unauthorized album and blocking Bouquet Records from using the name Tiny Tim or using his image. Tiny himself hated the album so much that he wanted them all to be destroyed. This was due to his embarrassment that he hadn't put the effort in the first place back in 1962 to sing properly when he self-sabotaged his first big shot. Following this, in August 1968, a third single of Tiny's was released from his debut album called Hello Hello. Yet again, a cover song, however it failed to crack the top 100 and was also a flop. Despite this, Tiny continued to perform live and went on his first official international tour, travelling to England during October 1968, where he made appearances on talk shows such as The Dave Allen Show. However, while touring here in London, Tiny faced criticism from the media, claiming that he wasn't genuinely what we see on the TV screen, combined with rumours that he was either gay or a transsexual. Meanwhile, Tiny's relationship with his manager, Ron de Blasio, had begun to break down. Tiny wouldn't let these things get in the way of his big moments, however, as he rode into cities throwing bouquets of flowers out to the eagerly awaiting crowds outside his Rolls-Royce, before Tiny made his way to France and Germany for a couple of interviews, magazine shoots, and appearances on TV, with Tiny beginning to build his audience across Europe. With Tiny returning to the US, he performed for a second time on The Ed Sullivan Show and would even meet one of his idols, being Bing Crosby, on his TV show Hollywood Palace, as he got to live out a dream performing on stage in a segment with Crosby. Tiny would also meet and hang out with George Harrison of the Beatles, where George decided to record Tiny speaking into a microphone, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas, which would later be included on the Beatles' Christmas album on the track Nowhere Man, released in 1968. Tiny would then perform in Miami, Florida at the Fontainebleau Hotel for a 10-day residence gig, which would go down as his highest-paying gig of his career, bringing home a massive $65,000, which was huge money for the time. At this time, Tiny was also butting heads with Ron de Blasio, his manager, with the pair both threatening each other that they would leave or fire one another, with Tiny at one stage actually going as far as throwing de Blasio out of his hotel room. De Blasio had simply had enough of Tiny and the endless covering he did for him as he took off back to California, leaving his second in charge and Tiny's agent, named Jeff Wald, to oversee Tiny, who had also been on Tiny's back about his ridiculous spending habits. Tiny's popularity was at an all-time high, and he was a busy, busy man. However, the fame was clearly going to his head when he made a selfish and rebellious move and ordered 31 bottles of expensive champagne via room service, imitating Jeff Wald's voice. When Wald received the bill, totaling $1,000, he was sent into a fury, bursting into Tiny's hotel room and holding Tiny up against a wall, threatening him over what he had done, only for Tiny Tim to exclaim, "Don't worry, I saved one for you." Meanwhile, Reprise Records would encourage Tiny Tim to record his second official album, and the mammoth task was set out to eclipse the success of the first album, which was an uphill battle, especially on the charts. Reprise and Warner Brothers Records allowed quite the generous budget for the recording of this album, with Richard Perry returning to produce his second album for Tiny. During November 1968, the album titled Tiny Tim's Second Album was released to the public, which featured covers such as Time Goes By and Great Balls of Fire, originally performed by Jerry Lee Lewis, which made it to number 45 on the UK chart and 86 on the US chart. Great Balls of Fire, in fact, earned positive reviews and was a standout rendition on the album. However, the second album overall would struggle to sell as well as Tiny's debut album, God Bless Tiny Tim, and was deemed a flop, with Tiny blaming the bootlegged Concert in Fairyland album for the failure of Tiny's official second album, claiming it ruined his reputation and smothered the market with too much Tiny Tim. As fans also thought the second album was actually Concert in Fairyland and went out to buy it, only to realise the quality wasn't very good at all, leading to consumers growing frustrated about purchasing it, with Tiny going as far as to say, quote, "It killed my career." What was most intriguing about the second album was the album cover artwork, featuring Tiny Tim sat on a dining table in the middle of the image, with his father Boutros and mother Tilly sat on either side of him, which happened to be taken when Tiny appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show, with his parents watching on from the audience. After attempting to gain his parents' approval, Tilly began to speak more frequently to her friends and people in the neighbourhood about Tiny and how proud she was, hiding her earlier thoughts about Tiny's life choices and upbringing, claiming in an interview, quote, "Everybody loved him. He was very bright, very unusual." While others, who once turned a blind eye to him, started to acknowledge his accomplishments and claim to know him. Sadly, however, it was only due to the fact that he had made something of himself. Tiny, aged 36, finished 1968 being labelled by a publisher as the novelty act of the year, something that Tiny desperately didn't want to be labelled as. While in the new year of 1969, Tiny appeared on Laugh-In once again, where he was filmed for a number of comedy segments. And while Tiny claimed that his appearances on Laugh-In, especially in the beginning of his career, were vital to him making it, people were starting to question if Tiny was more of a comedy act rather than a professional artist that should be taken seriously. After all, it was hard to take him seriously in the first place, with his onstage persona, the way he dresses, and his singing and talking voices. Briefly after this, Tiny would award Miss Joanne Stevens with his trophy for the most beautiful woman in the world, despite the pair breaking off their brief fling back in September 1968. But, in order to stop Joanne thinking that Tiny was interested in rekindling their relationship when awarding her the trophy, he thought up a plan only the dastardly Tiny Tim could, and told her he was set to die in 6 months from a mysterious illness, so it was best that she moved on. While Tiny was still riding the wave of his fame and success from his debut album, by 1969, with the drama surrounding the unauthorized Concert in Fairyland album, and Tiny Tim's second album failing to be a success, Tiny started to experience a decline in popularity, which led to him gaining a substantial amount of weight, using food as a vice for his misery, as Tiny would sit and consume large amounts of crunchy peanut butter and honey, while he also gained weight from being confined to his hotel room after shows, hardly venturing out on the town to socialise. And to make matters worse, The media had now noticed too, with the journalist Melinda McCracken writing, quote, "Now he has a soft, plump figure of a 60-year-old professor." While Tiny was still performing often at large venues and places like casinos for a couple of weeks, he was starting to noticeably lose fans, with smaller numbers turning up to each gig. Tiny began to panic, and he thought that this could be the beginning of the end. With Tiny, in a 1979 interview, quoted as saying, "I'll tell you when my popularity started to slip. I'd say in February of 1969. I was at the Ladin Casino in Jersey before Tiny told himself that it was time to start over again from scratch and claw his way back to the top." Tiny's search for love also continued during 1969, when by mid-year he had a brief relationship with a young stewardess named Miss Carol Chase, who even proposed to Tiny, with Tiny agreeing to marry her, only to break off their engagement soon after. The pair's plans to marry would often shift from on again, off again, constantly, before parting ways with Carol, as Tiny had once broke off their relationship without speaking face to face and instead sent a telegram to her. With Carol and Tiny going their separate ways, Tiny wondered if he'd ever find the one. That was, however, until he met a young woman that went by the name of Victoria May Budinger, or as Tiny referred to her as, Miss Vicky, and with one famous appearance on The Tonight Show, Tiny would be front and centre once again, as young Vicky watched on as one of his biggest fans. On the 1st of June 1969, 37-year-old Tiny Tim would embark on a month-long book tour to promote his debut book called Beautiful Thoughts, which contained quotes and Tiny's philosophies on things like life and success. The book tour itself would go on to be a great success, selling 5,000 to 10,000 copies a week at $2.95 each. And while the large lines of fans in different cities around the US stretched around the block outside the book signings, most were there just to get a glimpse at the strange entertainer, or have things like a piece of paper, body parts as outrageous as breasts, or random items signed, despite showing no interest at all in buying the book. This frustrated de Blasio, who wanted Tiny to turn down those who were there for anything other than the book itself. However, Tiny didn't mind, and he enjoyed the interactions with his fans. It just so happened to be that on June 3rd, 1969, on his very first stop on his book tour, that Tiny would be greeted by a 17-year-old brunette woman named Victoria Budinger. Victoria, aka Miss Vicky, happened to stumble upon the book signing when Vicky and her mother Emma were on their way to a department store in Philadelphia known as Wanamaker's, when they accidentally found themselves arriving on the wrong floor and walking into Tiny's book signing meet and greet. However, this worked out perfectly for Vicky, who had been a massive fan of Tiny's after previously seeing his performances and skits on TV shows, and she found him to be interesting and different. As they were here now anyway, Vicky's mother decided to purchase a copy of Beautiful Thoughts for Vicky as they lined up to get the book signed by Tiny. Vicky made such an impression on Tiny that he had noticed her standing in line and eagerly awaited the line to thin out so he could talk to her. He couldn't take his eyes off her, with Tiny writing in his diary that during those moments, he had to tell himself, "Get away from me, Satan." When Vicky's turn came, the pair introduced themselves, with Tiny writing in her book, "To Miss Vicky, God bless you always, Tiny Tim." The only interaction the pair had was when Vicky noticed a band-aid on Tiny's finger with Tiny explaining that it was to cover his warts. Not exactly a flattering first encounter. However, this didn't deter Vicky, and she seemed super interested in Tiny when she reappeared in the line once again to get a second copy of his book signed, this time claiming that the book was for her sister. But, too shy and nervous to ask, Tiny and Vicky parted ways without sharing their contact details. Tiny later claimed that she was the most beautiful girl that he ever saw, and that it was love at first sight. After the book signing, Tiny just couldn't stop thinking about Miss Vicky, so he decided to send his manager, Joe Cappy, to source out anything he could on how to get in contact with her, and as the search intensified and Tiny longed to communicate with her, he had a reporter also start the search, as he posted an article in the local paper searching for a Miss Vicky. The headline for the story read, "Who is the mysterious Miss Vicky?" and went on to explain that Tiny Tim was searching for her. By chance, Vicky's mother Emma found the article in her local paper and showed it to Vicky, explaining that she thinks the story is referring to her. Not too long after, Tiny held a second book signing nearby to where Vicky lived. So strangely, with encouragement from her mother, Vicky, with her sister Tracy, would attend the book signing, only to realise that it was in fact that Vicky that Tiny had been referring to. So, when they saw each other, details were exchanged, and the pair would soon meet up properly in person for the very first time. Despite usually giving out a trophy towards the end of the year for the most beautiful woman, Tiny thought Miss Vicky was so beautiful that he would present it early, as he promptly got on the phone and organised a trophy to be made immediately so that he could present it to Miss Vicky in person. This was despite Ron de Blasio criticising Tiny for wasting money when he didn't have it in the first place. However, Tiny pleaded that it was well worth it for Miss Vicky, and de Blasio begrudgingly agreed to give him the money to pay for the trophy. By the third book signing visit, and being the third time the pair had met, Vicky joined Tiny before the opportunistic media decided to interview Miss Vicky at the signing, as the pair ventured back to Tiny's hotel room. By this point, the pair had started dating, as they sent letters and talked over the phone to one another regularly. What was strange, however, was the 20-year age gap that was seemingly encouraged by Vicky's mother, Emma, as Tiny, being 37 years old, and Miss Vicky, being only 17, of course raising some eyebrows, but evidently not enough at the time, as this was yet again another inappropriate relationship that would be laughed off as being acceptable, because he was a so-called star, when in reality, Tiny had a history of displaying predatory behaviours towards younger women and even men. Tiny was practically old enough to be Vicky's father, and while it was more common during these times, it still doesn't make it okay. Surprisingly, Vicky's family didn't seem to have much of an issue with their relationship, with Vicky's mother claiming it was, quote, cute. However, perhaps they were more excited and comforted by the fact that Tiny was famous and that he potentially had money and could take care of their daughter, which, truth be told, and little to their knowledge, Tiny didn't have much money at all, if any, to his name, often looking to de Blasio for handouts. Miss Vicky was born on the 20th of April, 1972, and hailed from Haddonfield, New Jersey, with Vicky being raised by her mother, Emma Elizabeth Carr, and her father, Alan Harvey Budinger, in a middle-class household, alongside her four sisters, Jean, Aline, Tracy, and Judith. As together as a family, they moved around regularly due to the nature of her father's work, with her father Alan working as a travelling art supply salesman, an occasional painter or artist, who went under the artist alias name of Hillary. With Vicky and her family constantly on the move, it became too difficult for Vicky to keep enrolling in new schools. So by the age of 16, she decided to drop out and take up the role of an usherette, where she would be required to interact with guests or customers and point them in the right direction, while eventually by age 17, she met Tiny. As Tiny and Miss Vicky got to know one another, marriage talks between the two would begin after just a month together, as Tiny continued on his book tour, where he explained to the media that he was thinking about changing both his name to Herbert Braintree and his appearance into the future, as he spoke about cutting off his long hair and the potential of having his face painted one half white and one half purple. However, these plans, of course, wouldn't eventuate. During June 1969, Tiny Tim continued to tour both his book and his music, even travelling to Canada to perform at a music festival, which also boasted a lineup of Steppenwolf and the Velvet Underground. However, just when Tiny's behaviour couldn't get any more despicable, he would reveal through his diaries that he was already being unfaithful to Miss Vicky when Tiny returned to his creepy and sinful ways and met and was said to have even proposed to a 15-year-old named Miss Jan, while he also met a young lady named Miss Karen, who he also awarded another trophy to for her beauty, and even discussed marrying her too. Tiny would also meet and fool around with four other young women named Miss Trisha, Miss Riley, a different Miss Vicky to Vicky Buttinger, and finally, he was also seeing Miss Carol Chase once again after already breaking it off with her just a couple of months earlier. Tiny was well and truly out of control, and to be fair, his interest in young ladies, particularly between the ages of 15 to 17, were incredibly disturbing and inappropriate, and getting out of hand. How he wasn't called out publicly for this behaviour is anyone's guess, and those surrounding him that remain silent are just as much to blame. On August 17th, 1969, after Tiny had ran wild on tour, he would arrive at a hotel in Atlantic City, nearby to the Steel Pier, where he would be performing four shows a day for a week. Vicky and her mother Emma would also fly in and stay in a nearby hotel, with Vicky coming to meet with Tiny. Tiny would display once again that he wasn't the kind of man he attempted to portray in public by choosing not to inform Vicky of his wild and unfaithful shenanigans on tour, and instead said to Vicky that she would be the perfect person to marry, basically laying it on her that he would like to marry her. However, Vicky wasn't overly impressed with the offer and thought it was a crazy idea, with her being so young and Tiny being 37. But after returning home and scouring through old photo albums of her family, Vicky realised how common it was to marry young or to marry an older man during those days, just as her great-grandmother had, and decided that it must be normal. With her mother being supportive of the marriage proposal, Vicky had a change of heart, claiming that the fact that Tiny also looked younger and acted younger contributed to her changing her mind. So, despite her father having some concerns, Vicky decided to agree to Tiny's marriage proposal. With Vicky agreeing to marry Tiny, Tiny would then have insecure feelings, wondering what she actually saw in him in the first place, and he started to wonder and grow paranoid that perhaps Vicky was marrying him for the fame. Tiny would then sit down with Vicky and her parents to discuss their marriage plans, and to ask them the old-fashioned way to take Vicky's hand in marriage. While they agreed, Tiny believed they did hold some doubt over his intentions, and his age, with Tiny writing in his diary, quote, "Their lips said yes, but their eyes did not." Despite this, Tiny did get along with both parents and shared a bond with Vicky's father, Alan, over sports, art, and music. Tiny's mother, Tilly, on the other hand, thought Vicky was kind, but way too young for Tiny, with Tiny quoted as saying, "I like young girls." Now that Vicky had agreed to marry Tiny, Tiny all of a sudden began to open up about some of his issues and inform Vicky of his mood swings, that he likes his alone time, and that he had kissed and done other sinful things with other women prior to their engagement while they were together. However, Miss Vicky, despite being disappointed in his unfaithfulness, appreciated his honesty, and the wedding plans would roll on regardless. With Tiny also revealing that one other marriage condition meant that they would also have to include Tiny being able to watch and attend Dodgers and Maple Leafs games. The build-up to the wedding wouldn't be a normal one, however, when Tiny decided to send the non-Christian Vicky away to a type of Get Right with Christ camp for born-again Christians, called Word of Life with Jack Wordson. The Christian camp was a one-week camp designed to get Vicky closer to God and aligned with Tiny's beliefs. With Tiny basically giving Vicky no choice but to attend, Vicky would be made to attend multiple hour-long sermons each day, with Vicky claiming it bordered on cult-like behaviour. Camp leader, Jack Wordson, even called Tiny to inform him that Vicky would not be fit to marry Tiny due to her lack of faith in Christ and lack of dedication to the week-long program. However, despite some raised doubts, this didn't deter Tiny from going through with the marriage. During this time, Tiny's management also underwent an overhaul and a range of confusing changes, as Joe Kaufman and Joe Capoluzzo, aka Joe Cappy, took over from Ron Silver and Mark Hammerman. However, Ron de Blasio remained in the picture, with Tiny often having multiple managers at one time. Tiny would soon come crawling back to Ron Silver, however, after he discovered that Joe Kaufman had taken all $14,000 of his from earnings for gigs in Australia. So Kaufman was fired and Silver was brought back on board. But again, just 4 days later, Tiny was conned by Kaufman to rehire him, and Tiny did just that, angering Ron Silver and then forcing his hand, with Silver refusing to release Tiny back to Kaufman, and telling Tiny he must first pay him $10,000, among other clauses, to be free of his contractual obligations, to which Tiny agreed again, being conned out of money. Many have claimed over the years that it was around this time that Tiny was being managed by mob members, who were linked to Frank Sinatra, which led to investigations by the FBI over these connections. During August 1969, Tiny released his third studio album with Reprise Records, titled For All My Little Friends, with Tiny this time around targeting his younger audience and recording a children's album after his label had pitched the idea to Tiny due to his ever-popular children's audience. Full of covers, some of the standout tracks included What the World Needs Now, Chickory Chick, Mickey the Monkey, Aren't You Glad You're You, and On the Good Ship Lollipop. Richard Perry wouldn't return to produce the album after the pair had somewhat of a falling out, with Tiny losing faith in Perry's ability and Tiny wanting more control over the album's vision, sound, and style. Instead, Tiny opted for his sound engineer, Gene Chivalry, to produce the album for him. While the album didn't sell overly well and received mixed reviews from critics, Tiny did receive his first and only Grammy nomination of his career for Best Album for Children, losing to an album by Peter Paul and Mary's called Peter Paul and Mummy. But with this, Tiny had now pigeonholed himself further with this album, pushing him further into the novelty category as this once quirky shining star was beginning to fade. As September 1969 rolled around, Tiny and Vicky would be followed by the media to Tiffany's, purchasing a 1.5-carat diamond engagement ring before announcing their intention to marry to the whole world on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, with Vicky making her on-screen debut appearance, where a shy Miss Vicky struggled to find the words, so Tiny spoke for her, as he often did, claiming he was hopeful of starting a family, and opened up that while he had fooled around in the past, that technically he was still a virgin at the age of 37. After originally planning to marry at Vicky's parents' house on Christmas Day in Haddonfield, New Jersey, where Vicky hailed from, Tiny, in the Johnny Carson green room backstage, decided to change the date and location of the wedding to The Tonight Show itself, on the 17th of December, later that year, without even properly consulting Vicky after Johnny and the show's producers proposed the idea to Tiny. The chance for further fame and notoriety was just too tempting for Tiny, and nothing could change his mind. He refused to return to his boring, plain life, and for his career to just keep dipping. Despite Vicky being upset about Tiny changing the plans without her consent, there was nothing that she could do. Vicky clearly didn't want to go through with it, but she had hoped he would come to his senses, with her sister Jean claiming that Vicky was, quote, mortified. The media storm also picked up, as excitement, confusion and minor outrage over Vicky's age began to circulate amongst the public and the media, with one distasteful headline reading, "Teenager topples Tiny Tim." The media was so aggressive in their style of reporting that they had even found the address of Vicky's parents and began harassing them outside their home every day for interviews and updates, forcing Vicky's parents to take their phone off the hook to stop calls coming in all hours of the night and day, with Vicky's sister Jean claiming that the media would always, from this day forward, take an interest in her family for the next 40 years, never leaving them in complete peace. Tiny Tim would come under some scrutiny from the media, being labelled a freak or a weirdo. However, Vicky's family and Vicky herself would defend him to the media. Despite Vicky supporting her fiancé, sadly for Miss Vicky, she would again be informed of the bad news of Tiny's unfaithfulness when Tiny confessed to her that he had sinned with another woman named Iris. Making matters worse, Vicky even happened to bump into Iris during a photo shoot, where the interaction became awkward and anxiety-ridden. Despite confessing to Vicky and God for cheating on Vicky, Tiny's weakness or itch for sinning would again seem secretly plan to meet up with Miss Iris for more fooling around in California, with Tiny writing in his diary that it was due to his insecurities about Vicky not really being in love with him and his fear of not being able to keep her happy, while he also very cunningly planned to run away and elope with Iris as he started to get cold feet about his very public wedding with Miss Vicky. However, after second thoughts, he cancelled their arranged meet-up in California before admitting to Miss Vicky that he almost cheated once again with Miss Iris. While cold feet is a normal feeling for some, Tiny's actions were extreme, destructive, and simply not normal, disregarding any of Vicky's feelings and putting his own cravings and needs before his soon-to-be wife. Despite his insecurities and excuses, we all know this was simply a cop-out, and Tiny's way of always having an out when he did something wrong. He simply couldn't help himself, and for a so-called Christian, he really wasn't doing a very good job at being faithful to God and repenting from sin. It was almost like a challenge to see how much he could get away with. But despite all these huge red flags and heartbreaking moments that surely would have sent anyone else packing, shattering Vicky's self-worth and confidence, the shy, quiet, and very forgiving 17-year-old continued on her way to marrying Tiny, as Tiny himself continued to tour England and Ireland, where in Ireland he received some terrible reviews for his performances. On December 17th, 1969, Tiny Tim and Vicky Budinger would tie the knot live on The Tonight Show, starring Johnny Carson, with Miss Vicky now becoming Mrs. Vicky Corey. With an estimated 40 to 50 million viewers watching on at home, the couple's wedding would become one of the highest rating or viewed television episodes of all time, and one that lives on in the memories of many. Tiny was believed to have gotten cold feet once again in the green room backstage, wondering if Vicky was doing it all for the fame. However, Tiny shook off those feelings and carried on. Utilizing vows that the couple had altered themselves, they would tie the knot, surrounded by white and yellow tulips, as the traditional wedding march on the organ played. When watching the cringy and blasphemous segment now, however, it's quite evident just how uncomfortable and shy Miss Vicky felt, with the whole world watching on, and making matters worse were moments like Johnny Carson asking Tiny if he could also kiss the bride as it's tradition or customary, as an uncomfortable Miss Vicky, without even saying yes, has her arm yanked forward by Tiny to have her hand kissed, only for Johnny to get up from his desk and walk over, planting a kiss on Vicky's cheek, very close to her lips, before Johnny sits back down and says, "She's a good kisser," getting a loud laugh and applause from the dim-witted audience as Miss Vicky blushes. The whole segment, while famous at the time, is extremely inappropriate and a hard watch, as Miss Vicky is paraded around and spoken about in a very demeaning way. Due to the couple's age difference and Vicky being only 17, it simply wouldn't fly in today's world, which can only be a positive. How so many people sat there and applauded and cheered, thinking this was normal, justifies belief. The awkwardness of the segment continued, however, as Miss Vicky, being only 17, of course, isn't allowed to consume alcohol. So when champagne was brought out to celebrate, she was awkwardly given a glass and had to refuse and hand it back, with the excuse on the show being used that Miss Vicky doesn't care for champagne. Instead, on air, she was made a drink of milk and honey that Tiny Tim supposedly enjoyed drinking before Vicky took the smallest of sips, pretending to enjoy the beverage. However, it was quite obvious she did not. According to Justin Martell from the book The Eternal Troubadour, when the ratings came in the following day, it was estimated that 84% of people watching TV that night were tuned into the wedding itself in New York. Meanwhile, the crime rate for Chicago and the volume of traffic in LA was significantly reduced that evening, suggesting that instead they were at home glued to their TVs watching the wedding, as it was that big of a deal at the time. For many years, the wedding would rank second only behind the moon landing as the highest-rated TV show, and would enter the Guinness World Records. Tiny was at this point in time the biggest star on the scene, or at least for a brief moment, with his on-screen marriage to Miss Vicky leading to massive sales of 1 million copies of the album God bless Tiny Tim. Tiny said in his diary after the wedding, quote, "Thank you for the greatest day ever, for this evening. I got married for the first time, and the last I pray to the most beautiful girl I know, Miss Victoria May Budinger. I pray I can be worthy of her and make her happy." Tiny and Vicky's wedding reception was held at Manny's Music Store on 52nd Street, Manhattan, where Tiny claims all of their wedding gifts, from guests, had been stolen. Once the wedding and ceremony after had finished, and Tiny and Miss Vicky were finally alone after a hectic night, Tiny would turn to Vicky and say, quote, "I know we're married and all, but there's always going to be other women. You're never going to be the only one. There will always be other women in my life, and I just want you to know that I'm always going to give out trophies." This heartless confession from Tiny left Vicky speechless, as she sat in disbelief and felt like her whole world had just started crumbling down, wondering to herself, what had she done? As she claimed that Tiny just kept rambling on, trying to defend his actions and what he had just said, while for Vicky, all she could hear was just a deafening ringing in her ear, and she couldn't even focus on what he was saying. As Vicky said, quote, "I was completely heartbroken. I was 17 years old. This was my first serious love, and he's telling me I'm not going to be the only one." Vicky claims that from this moment onwards, that their marriage would always be rocky, and that it hurt their marriage so much that it would never be the same, claiming she cried non-stop for days afterwards. One of these women that Tiny was alluding to, and that he was rumoured to have been seeing at the time, was Miss Jan, who was a fanatical fan of Tiny's, who flew 3,000 miles to be at the wedding, while Tiny was even said to have made sure that she got to sit in for the programme when she courted him backstage before the wedding took place. Vicky would also claim that they soon discovered that they had very little in common, after coming to the realisation that she had rushed into the wedding. Vicky also pondered if she should just go home to her parents. It's even believed that Tiny and Vicky wouldn't have sexual intercourse until 6 months into their marriage, with Tiny losing his virginity at the age of 37. Despite the rare occasion that they had sex, during their marriage, Tiny would resist the temptation to have sex with Vicky, which would eventually cause her to grow frustrated, as he chose to sleep in separate rooms, so he wouldn't get tempted. Tiny and Vicky's marriage had really only just begun, and it was already hitting turbulence, with Tiny's career also taking priority over their relationship. One thing was certain, and that was this wild ride was only just beginning, and Tiny and Vicky hadn't seen the worst of each other just yet. Thank you for tuning into that episode. Don't forget to check out our other episodes, ranging from Kurt Cobain and Freddie Mercury to Prince, Tracy Chapman and Stevie Nicks, and up-and-comers like Youngblood, Tones and I, and The Kid Laroi. For more information regarding this episode, including weekly updates and more, head to our Facebook page at Lyrics of Their Life Podcast, or our website at lyricsoftheirlife.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and even YouTube and Spotify, where you can find a range of playlists featuring the music of every artist covered in the Lyrics of Their Life podcast so far. If you really enjoy the podcast and would like to give back for the hard work that goes into it, it would be greatly appreciated if you could leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, or you can now rate the podcast on Spotify. Don't forget to let your friends and family know about what they've been missing out on, and feel free to click the free subscribe or follow button to the podcast wherever you listen, so you can receive a notification every time a new episode becomes available. If you would like to support the podcast financially, then please feel free to head to Patreon or buymeacoffee.com, where you can contribute your support for the podcast in exchange for some bonus content, ranging from as little as $1 donations to really anything you like. Every bit of support is greatly appreciated, and it means I can continue to bring you more great episodes in the future. This podcast is created and researched completely independently, so your contribution would really help this podcast continue on. Once again, thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life.